heart, the heart of the Islamic people, while Islam is the religious of love between the people.
This conference is very important for me, all Pakistanis and all Muslims, because there has been so many cruel activities on behalf of non-Muslims or Western countries against Islam and Muslims.
Member of the international conference warned the Islamic countries to act quickly against the possible future threats given the previous experience with the West.
Islamophobia had been created to balance the teachings of Ahle Bayt alayhimus salam. It was created to balance and misguide people from the way of Quran and Sunnah. Things took place in the name of Daesh and so-called. And they did things which were absolutely against the teachings of Islam. They never understood.
The delegation in the conference also stressed the significance of the eradication of Daesh from Iraq and Syria to save Islam and also save humanity from the plague of terrorist groups like Daesh, which is seen as a Western plot against Islam and the Islamic community. Mohammed Turi, Karachi.
Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah lashed out at the United States as the mother of corruption and terrorism in the region and stressed that the expulsion of U.S. forces from the region will be the final revenge for the U.S. assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Iraqi Popular Mobilization Unit's commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in Baghdad in 2020.
We've declared earlier that the best revenge is the full withdrawal of U.S. troops from the region. And over the past 2 years, as the leader Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, the U.S. has been forced to leave Afghanistan with humiliation. This has led the U.S. allies to rethink their alliance with Washington.
In an address to a ceremony in Beirut remembering the martyrs Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis and their companions, Sayyid Nasrallah also accused the U.S. of being behind all Israeli and Saudi crimes in the region for decades.
The lesson which I would like to highlight today is that everyone acting for the sake of God emerges victorious in all battles and wins the hearts and minds of all people across the Arab and Muslim worlds. They show us that the U.S. serves as a real enemy and source of corruption, occupation, and terrorism in our region.
Analysts believe that the project of the resistance continues to face the criminality of the U.S. in Lebanon and the region.
Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani belongs to the school of thought of a struggle against the occupiers of our land and those who destroyed our homes and killed our people and led one war after the other with their support for the Zionists. He sacrificed his life and stood against terrorism in Iraq, Yemen, Syria, and Lebanon and Palestine. He taught us that Lebanon is strong enough and can remove itself from the U.S. hegemony.
The leader of the resistance stressed that the assassination of martyr Soleimani, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, has triggered a new phase at the regional level.
The assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and PMU commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis is seen as an incident larger than the region itself, and for many analysts has brought to light a long-term confrontation for Lebanon's Hezbollah facing U.S. influence in Lebanon and the region. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Caskets draped in Iranian flag contains the bodies of 150 Iranian soldiers whose remains have recently been found more than 3 decades after the end of the Iraqi-imposed war on Iran. The mourning procession in Tehran is part of a larger national event which saw similar memorial services held for 100 more martyrs in 24 provinces across the country. The funerals were attended by Iranian military and state officials, as well as thousands of Iranians, to pay tribute to the martyrs, and also to observe the second anniversary of the U.S.'s assassination of top Iranian military figure, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani.
We have returned, and now the people are greeting those martyrs who have sacrificed their lives. General Soleimani also was a personality who has sacrificed his life in order to maintain the security of our country. Now this is a coincidence with the second anniversary of martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani. And now they have returned. As you can see, everyone is holding the picture of General Qasem Soleimani. And this shows a reminder of the job that General Soleimani has done for our country.
General Soleimani fought for the security of our country and the region. He pushed back the terrorists, and this made him as a popular figure in the region.
Lieutenant General Soleimani was the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. He was assassinated in a U.S. air raid outside Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from then U.S. President Donald Trump. Soleimani is highly revered in the region for his anti-terror efforts and his role in eradicating Daesh terrorists from Iraq in 2017.
General Soleimani spent all his life fighting for our security, once in the Iraq-Iran war and then in the fight against terrorism. The U.S. assassinated him because he did not allow the terrorists to take over the region. The U.S. fought with the terrorists.
We are all Qasem Soleimani. The United States thought in vain that if it killed our general, it would disrupt his endeavors, but we all will keep his legacy alive.
General Soleimani began his career as a soldier in the IRGC in the Iraq-Iran war. While above 200,000 Iranians are estimated to have either lost their lives or gone missing during the war. Over the years, the country has been carrying out search operations to recover the remains of those missing.
The Islamic Republic always holds such mass ceremonies to honor its martyrs, and General Soleimani is no exception, as the country also regards him as a martyr and a national hero. Now, on the second anniversary of Soleimani's assassination, Iranians have been using any chance to pay homage for him. These people say this is to preserve what Soleimani stood for. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrors fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. and everything mighty yields to his mightiness. So to thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may his blessings be upon his messenger endlessly, and his salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for thee. I ask thee concerning the complaints of thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among thy servants, of a handmaid from among thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask thee, O he who owns all objects of need which are granted by his will and hastened to his desire, that thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that thou willst, and givest me mercy from thee. Forgiveness decreases thee not, and giving injuries thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from thee: the facility to obey thee at its beginning, and the favor of thy forgiveness at its end. O he who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
And welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Thanks so much for being with us. On January 3rd, 2020, the U.S. in its terrorist attack assassinated Iranian anti-terror icon Commander Qasem Soleimani and Iraqi Commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandas. A few days later, on January the 8th, Iran launched its missile attack on a U.S. base, Ain al-Assad, in Iraq. No country had dared to attack a U.S. military base anywhere in the world, although there are 780 American bases in 80 countries. The missiles that Iran sent were deadly and accurate, causing major damage to the facilities and major injuries to hundreds of American soldiers. So why didn't Washington respond? And does Tehran say that the retaliation for the general's assassination is over? We will look at this and more on Spotlight.
On the 8th of January 2020, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps launched a barrage of missiles at Ain al-Assad Air Base, which housed American troops in Iraq's Anbar province. The attack, codenamed Operation Martyr Soleimani, was in retaliation for the U.S. assassination of top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani. He, along with senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, were martyred near Baghdad International Airport on the 3rd of January 2020 in a drone strike authorized by former U.S. President Donald Trump. All of the Iranian missiles hit their designated targets as American forces failed to intercept any, despite a high level of readiness in their bases across the region in the wake of Iran's pledge to avenge the assassination. In the meantime, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, stressed that the attack on Ain al-Assad was just a warning. Trump sought to portray the missile strike as a minor incident. Shortly after the Iranian attack, he tweeted, "All is well." Later, in a press conference at the White House, he tried to play down the magnitude of the attack.
No Americans were harmed in last night's attack by the Iranian regime. We suffered no casualties. All of our soldiers are safe, and only minimal damage was sustained at our military bases.
Controversially, media reports along with satellite images showed that the damage done to Ain al-Assad Air Base was much greater than what U.S. officials had acknowledged. There were also conflicting reports on the number of those wounded. Despite initially claiming that the strike resulted in no casualties, the Trump administration ultimately announced that over 100 U.S. forces suffered traumatic brain injuries.
Our shelter filled with dust. Shot into the shelter. Before that, we kind of accepted our fate.
The U.S. assassination of anti-terror icons General Soleimani and al-Muhandis raised popular calls in Iraq for the expulsion of American forces from the country. A few days after the assassination, the Iraqi parliament voted for the U.S. withdrawal. Amid the growing calls, the U.S. in December 2021 ended its combat mission in Iraq and limited it to an advisory role. Iran has time and again said the U.S. withdrawal from Iraq and other parts of West Asia is the ultimate price Washington would pay for assassinating General Soleimani, who played a key role in defeating the Daesh terror group in the region.
I'd like to welcome my guest to this spotlight, TV host and political commentator Syed Mohsen Abbas out of London. And journalist and political analyst Mostafa Khoshchashm out of Tehran.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Thank you both for being with me. Well, let's start this off in London and Syed Mohsen. I want to just start off by talking about the overall violation of international law by the U.S. with this terror attack on these resistance military leaders. I mean, unbelievable attacking a political leader, also who was on a campaign and trying to calm the situation down in the region anyway, attacking him, killing him in a foreign country. I want to look at it overall, the violations from an international law perspective, and do you think that they will ever be held responsible for it in an international court?
Well, no one body really internationally in terms of legal reports can be approached. There is nobody that really internationally can hold the United States to account. The United States, of course, has exonerated itself from all international agreements and treaties. They regard themselves as exceptional. They regard themselves as above any law. Yet they hypocritically, of course, require everybody else to follow those very same agreements which they're signatories to. This is a standard practice, and they've long since shed any notion of being held to account by any international criminal courts, or whether it's the United Nations or any such body. So first of all, I think there's absolutely zero possibility of any international agencies to go to bring Donald Trump and all the criminals who literally sponsored state terrorism, committed an act of killing, cold-blooded judicial killing to a diplomat who was on his way to try and create some sort of rapprochement between regional powers. So absolutely not. There's nothing that the Americans really care about on that front, and I think everybody should really just give up any hope of that ever happening. Mosia, that's my honest assessment.
Okay, Mostafa, there was a lot of fear in the West that World War III would be starting after the assassination of General Soleimani and the others. Doesn't that fear prove that the world knows that Iran is a force to be reckoned with? Because Washington actually assassinates people, striking them with drones frequently. But the anxiety that this caused was on a totally different level.
Hello, Mazia. Hello, Said Mohsen Abbas and the audience. Thanks for having me.
Thanks
for
coming.
The Iranian missile attack on Ain al-Assad was an epoch-making, a landmark development because it proved many things. It had so many messages as well as repercussions, not only vital for Iran and the relations or confrontation between Iran and the United States, but also for the whole world. You know, Major General Qasem Soleimani was the lead commander in the region when it comes to war against occupiers as well as terrorists. The same terrorists that were called by Donald Trump during his presidential campaign in 2016 when he was talking about ISIS. He said that they were created by Obama and Clinton. And we have so many confessions, direct confessions from former and present Democrat and Republican officials in the White House, in Washington, actually, who have all admitted that the U.S. and its allies created the ISIS or ISIL or Daesh in this region. And they admitted, many of them, like Petraeus, in a documentary on Haj Qasem Soleimani's life when he was alive. It was aired on, BBC Channel 4 in Britain, and they admitted that Qasem Soleimani was the top commander who crushed ISIS and eradicated ISIS. So this ISIS, as we do all remember, that if it hadn't been for Qasem Soleimani, IRGC force, as well as Hezbollah, Hashd al-Shaabi, Syria, and many others in the region that eradicated Daesh, that there would have been thousands or tens of thousands of victims in Europe. We do remember the ISIS attacks in Nice, London, Madrid, and in the Philippines and elsewhere throughout the world. They even declared a caliphate in China. Who crushed them but Qasem Soleimani? So this attack was a direct display, a flagrant violation of international laws, but it directly displayed how the United States supports the terrorists, and it was pretty well known that it would trigger a new era, and it has.
Okay.
Look at the number of attacks on the American forces in the region now.
Stay with me, Mostafa. I'm going to get into that a little bit later in the program. But Syed Mohsen, your overall analysis that Iran could and did strike that American base immediately, really, after the burial of General Soleimani?
Well, the base they struck, of course, was very, very significant. It's one of many bases that basically encircle Iran. And this was the tactic of the the Israeli Yinon plan combined with the American forces on the ground to basically hem in Iran. So when Iran responded with this large ballistic missile response, it really is unprecedented. No other nation has attacked American military bases in this way, certainly not with ballistic missiles, and that, I think, is very much something which has rattled. The Islamic Republic of Iran, first of all, sent them a very clear message. By their own admission, by the admission of General Frank McKenzie, who were that attack, and in fact the assassination of Lieutenant General Soleimani as well, he says very clearly that we had no defense against this ballistic missile attack that was launched. I'd never experienced anything like it. The result was hundreds of their soldiers were basically brain traumatized and are still suffering from PTSD and all sorts of other related medical conditions. 1,000 pound warheads were attached to these weapons. 16 of them landed, that's the estimate that they've given. And people like the Army Major General who were on the ground, who were running for cover, basically weren't even given. And this is why I suspect, rather, that the American army itself or the American administration didn't really care about their soldiers in this place. They knew the missiles were coming in, yet they made those soldiers stay there. On top of that, they gave them bunkers, Marzia, which were inadequate. They were not geared up for anything like this. In fact, I would say Donald Trump has kind of the responsibility of not only the murder of Qasem Soleimani, but his own citizens, his own soldiers, were basically neglected. What the result of it all is that the Americans now know very clearly that Iran is capable of exacting very precise damage to any interests that Americans have, military or otherwise. In fact, they're able to do it straight to the heart of Tel Aviv. Mm. That has been the major significant result, I think, of the slap that Ayatollah Khamenei said they had promised, and they delivered there as a warm-up.
Okay. Well, Mustafa, I mean, there were attempts to downplay the significance of this Iranian missile attack, but I want to look at the other side of it. Now, Syed Mohsen just talked about the significance of it, but I want to your perspective. Why do you think that the United States tried to downplay it and did not respond? I mean, with Trump basically saying there was no damage and no one was hurt, and of course we know that there was great material damage, and also, as Syed Mohsen just described just now, hundreds of soldiers who were hurt. So your perspective, why, first of all, didn't the United States respond as they tried to show to the world that no one dares to touch them, and Iran sent these accurate missiles and definitely did more than touch them? Your thoughts.
Okay. From the viewpoint of an Iranian analyst, I know, we all know IRGC, the Islamic Republic, we know Iran, we know the power. But this is not specifically so from the viewpoint of a foreigner, even if it's like a Russian or a Chinese. Although they are in good terms with Iran, they may not, have the strong belief in every word that we say, including revenge for Haji Qasem Soleimani or any attacker. I remember quite well after Supreme Leader, who was the first to say just a few hours after Qasem Soleimani was assassinated that Iran would take revenge, very, very tough revenge. I was the first to appear on the same night on Iranian Persian language Channel 3 TV to say and to promise that Iran would reciprocate this attack in 72 hours, and it happened, because we do all know how Iran feels and Iran's power. We do know what Iran can do and set fire to the entire U.S. and U.S. allies throughout the world. But after Iran did it, even the Chinese and the Russians said that we never believed you would do the attack. Now we remove our hat in honor and in respect for you. The Chinese said the same. After a few weeks earlier, before the assassination, Iran shut down the global hawk. The Chinese said the same. But this time it was way bigger, because it was the first time that the United States came under a cross-border attack by another party, not like Vietnam or Korea. This was totally different. It was a cross-border attack. Now, this attack, I mean, the annual Assad attack, had several messages. First, it proved that Iran is serious, and when it says that it would defend itself against any invader, it does that when it makes a promise. Second, it has the capability and the means and advanced means. Third, it showed that Iran is not afraid of the other side, even if it's the superpower or the world top power. No matter who is standing on the opposite side, Iran stands resolved to take revenge. More importantly, it showed that the U.S. sanctions have failed to block Iran's progress. On the contrary, they have encouraged Iranians to develop their own means and instruments and develop technology. In a matter of 2 or 3 decades after the Iraqi imposed war on Iran, when Iran could not even import barbed wire, it was under tough sanctions, it had nothing, couldn't produce even a bullet. Now, after 2 or 3 decades, it has produced precision striking missiles, ballistic missiles, that even U.S. top generals throughout the past 1 year, they've been acknowledging that Iran has developed such a capability, unique capability in area of ballistic missile technology. More importantly, maybe in next question I'll deal with that I believe the most important factor was showing that the U.S. military threats lack credibility when it comes to Iran.
Okay.
It displayed pretty well, very tangibly, why we say the U.S. is moving on a course of demise, why the U.S. cannot start war with a country, a regional power like Iran. And this is the most important factor that I'll deal with in the next question, maybe, because it has an everlasting impact on Iran-U.S. confrontation. Even when it comes to the Vienna talks,
okay,
it was
stay with me. Stay with me, Mostafa. Said Mohsen. I'm going to pose that same question to you. Why is it, do you think, that the United States did not respond? Because, of course, in front of the world, when it wants to show that it is the hegemonic power of the world, then naturally, then they should have responded. Your thoughts about that?
Well, firstly, the Americans know perfectly well what the capability of Iran is in terms of hitting back and hitting the American interests. So, first of all, let's not forget that the Gulf, the Persian Gulf, is the Persian Gulf. It's controlled by Iranians. Nobody else controls that tract of a very important trade, if you like, transportation. So oil, energy, etc., around the world could basically be thrown into turmoil if Islamic Republic of Iran chooses. It doesn't even need a nuclear weapon or anything like that. It could bring large parts of the world to their knees simply by blowing up that entire Hormuz Strait and shutting down that entire pathway for getting oil out. So, secondly, the Americans, of course, won't gamble on that, in my opinion. I think the other thing is that they also know, the Americans know, that they can't do anything on a military ground basis. They don't have the means to be able to execute any kind and invasion of the Islamic Republic of Iran. They wouldn't dare. They also are very aware of Karbala 5 and the way that the Iranian forces fought, even without sophisticated weapons, back in the sacred defense, as it's known, the war against Iraq, which was again instigated and sponsored by the Americans and the Israelis, where Saddam invaded Iran. They remember how Iranians fought on the ground, so they don't want to taste that kind of battle. They know how the asymmetric warfare of the Islamic Republic of Iran is so much more solid now, from Yemen through to Lebanon, through to Palestine, through to Syria, in Iraq. Iran has consolidated an absolutely amazing range of military and other strategic partners who are capable of hurting American interests and Israeli interests very, very badly. The Americans have all this intelligence. They know perfectly well that if they're going to do something like this, they need to be able to back up what they're saying. I don't believe they have the on-the-ground capability. And apart from saber-rattling, virtue signaling, or imposing unilateral sanctions, you know, these are the only things that they've been capable of doing in order to try and impose their rule, their order, as they say.
Well, Said Mustafa, there are some that say the attack was initiated, they say Trump. But is it true that this is basically part of American strategy? Biden was not particularly upset that these individuals were assassinated, just a little concerned about the ramification. I mean, what does this say about the whole American political establishment in your perspective?
You know, they are all the same. It doesn't make any difference. If there were some using cries or complaints against Donald Trump's assassination of Qasem Soleimani, well, it was not about the, you know, assassination. It was about the timing. They were saying that Donald Trump has done so to advertise for himself without considering the repercussions. Otherwise, they have all enshrined and endorsed the assassination, unfortunately. And no matter who is in the White House, they should pay back. That's for sure. No matter we have a deal in Vienna or now, or not, right now, in the next month, or in the next year, the issue with the revenge and reprisal for Qasem Soleimani stays there, and they should pay the price, no matter what happens. Now, let me say that the attack had several more messages. They displayed how advanced Iranian missiles are. Iran never intended to advertise anything, but it was somehow an advertisement, for the Iranian missile industry in a way that it could enter the market of exports, missile exports. You know, after the attack and after the Aramco attack by the Yemenis, when they defeated the Patriot missiles stationed in Saudi Arabia, many countries like India, they called off their earlier contracts for purchasing Patriot missile system from the United States. But more importantly, the Iranian attack shattered the U.S. awe. You know, a few months later, the Russians started sending drones over the intruding American warships in the Black Sea. They never dared to do so. But after the Iranians shut down the Global Hog and after they, you know, sent missiles, I mean, attacked Ain al-Assad with ballistic missiles, the Russians were also, you know, encouraged and emboldened to send their drones to shoo off intruding U.S. warships in the Black Sea. So it shattered the U.S. awe, especially after Donald Trump warned, you know, he had earlier warned that if Iran went for a reprisal attack for the assassination and the terror attack on Qasem Soleimani, he would bomb 52 centers, cultural centers.
Right.
You know, it has a meaning. By cultural centers, it meant that he would go for dropping nuclear bombs or mother of all bombs to eradicate the Iranian civilization.
Right. And of course, we saw nothing. At the end. Let me just get, I have 1 minute left, but Syed Mohsen. Syed Mohsen, Iran says retaliation for the assassination of General Soleimani still has not taken place, and ultimately the U.S. will be made to leave West Asia area. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, that's an indication that Iran will not rest till the key cancer in West Asia, which represents American interests and all of the what I call the Anglo-Zionist Empire's interest, is Israel. Until Israel is brought to heel in the region, I don't think the Islamic Republic of Iran can rest. The true, revenge Qasem Soleimani would be what Qasem Soleimani himself was targeting, which was that Al-Quds should be liberated and the Palestinian people should be allowed to live peacefully. And of course, the Americans and the Israelis who are creating all this this death and destruction should be erased from the region. That's number one. Number two, Iran has moved on. While they're saber-rattling, while the Americans and the West are still saber-rattling and trying to pin them with JCPOAs and nuclear red herrings, the reality is that Iran is moving rapidly towards China, Russia, and that alliance, whether it's through military alliances or whether it's through the 25-year comprehensive plan with China that Iran has instigated, or whether it's making relations in the north-south.
10 seconds, said Mohsen.
All of it is the progress for the future, and Iran is going in the right direction, I think.
And on that note, I'd like to thank both of you for being with me on this Spotlight. TV host and political commentator Syed Mohsen Abbas out of London, and journalist and political analyst Mostafa Khoshesh out of Tehran. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The Netherlands has ended funding to the Union of Agricultural Work Committees, one of six Palestinian organizations recently declared as terrorist groups by the fake regime of Israel. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Maureen Claire Murphy, journalist. This article is titled Dutch Double Standards: Punish Palestinians, Embrace Zionist Regime. Stay tuned for more. The Netherlands has ended funding to the Union of Agricultural Work Committees, one of six Palestinian organizations recently declared as terrorist groups by the fake regime of Israel. The implications of the Dutch move will reverberate throughout Palestinian civil society, which is under unprecedented attack by the Zionist regime. The Zionist regime accuses the prominent human rights and social services organizations of serving as front groups for the Popular Front of the Liberation of Palestine, a leftist political party banned by the Zionist regime, the U.S. and EU. The targeted groups reject the Zionist regime's claims and have demanded that Tel Aviv provide the evidence that it claims justifies by the sweeping measure. Recently, the Zionist regime responded by saying that it would allow the groups to review only the unclassified material on which it is basing the designations. In its response, the Zionist regime's military attorney stated that the core of the declarations is based on classified, cross-checked, and reliable intelligence confirmation that cannot be disclosed, as it may harm security. The Zionist regime's response shows that the targeted groups are afforded no due process rights. Adala, a group providing legal representation to the banned organization, said recently. It also suggests that the Zionist regime authorities have no evidence linking them with illegal acts and that this move amounts to the political persecution of human rights defenders. The terror designations leave the organization's staff vulnerable to arrest and their offices and property subject to closure and confiscation. The blacklisted group UAWC stated that given this context, the Dutch government was not abandoning it, but Palestinian civil society at large. The Dutch Foreign Ministry announced the decision recently after suspending aid to the group 18 months ago and following a year-long probe into possible links between the UAWC and the FPLP. That review examining the group's activities since 2007, when the Netherlands began funding the UAWC, yielded no evidence of financial flows between it and the PFLP. Nor has any proof been found of organizational unity between the UAWC and the PFLP, or PFLP providing direction to the UAWC, the Dutch Foreign Ministry states in an 8-page briefing to that country's parliament. While rejecting the Zionist regime's claim that the UAWC is an arm of the PFLP, the Dutch review found ties between individual staff and board members with the leftist group. The Dutch government is ending its funding on the basis of UAWC staff and board members' political affiliation in their personal capacities. The Netherlands is effectively punishing an entire organization and all its beneficiaries over alleged political sympathies of some of its staff and board members. The Foreign Ministry's briefing to the Dutch Parliament states that organizations will be asked how they deal with employees or board members who may be involved with groups that are on the EU and UN sanctions list. Palestinian resistance to the Zionist regime occupation, apartheid, and settler colonization has long been branded as unacceptable and criminalized. The U.S. designated the PFLP and other factions as terrorist groups as punishment for the rejection of the Oslo Accord signed by the fake regime of Israel and the Palestinian Liberation Organization in 1990s. UAWC said that the findings of the Dutch review reflect the group's status and existence as an independent organization which has no political or religious affiliation with any party or political organization. The group added that it cannot and would not interfere with the personal political beliefs and affiliations of its employees and board members. UAWC said it was shocked over the move based on alleged individual links resembling the toxic allegations of Israeli groups like NGO Monitor. Groups closely aligned with the Zionist regime, such as NGO Monitor, have for years published scurrilous accusations against Palestinian groups attempting to link them to proscribed political parties. The smear campaigns have resulted in onerous conditions on funding to Palestinian groups, curtailing their ability to carry out their work. So far, no government has come out in support of the Zionist regime's banning of the six Palestinian organizations it declared terror groups in October. But the U.S. and the EU have yet to explicitly condemn the move and demand that the Zionist regime revoke the designations. And as the Dutch abandonment of the UAWC shows, the Israeli declaration may have the intended effect of isolating the groups and drawing up their international funding. Three of the targeted groups, including Al-Haq, Al-Damir, and Defense for Children International Palestine, have submitted evidence to the International Criminal Court's war crimes investigation in the West Bank and Gaza Strip by the Zionist regime. That international tribunal is based in The Hague, the seat of the Dutch government. The UAWC was established in 1986 to support Palestinian farmers in the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip, facing Israeli land and water theft. Mm-hmm. The Zionist regime's illegal settlement activity is likely to be a primary focus of the International Criminal Court's investigation should it move forward. The Dutch government has been a leading donor to the UAWC since 2013, according to the group. The campaign to cut off Dutch funding to the group began in May 2019 when UK lawyers for the Israeli regime sent a letter to the Netherlands representative office in Ramallah with information about UAWC's supposed links to the PFLP. In June 2020, UK lawyers for the Zionist regime repeated those claims in a letter to Sigrid Kaag, Dutch development minister at the time, citing NGO Monitor as its principal source of information. UAWC said it was particularly saddened that the process leading to its disavowal was initiated by Kaag soon after her visit to the West Bank in early 2020, where she witnessed the relevance of the work. Kaag's oversight of funding to UAWC was used as a political cudgel by right-wing politicians in the Netherlands during that country's elections last year, as reported by more than 972 magazines. The UAWC said recently that the Zionist regime will seize the Dutch decision to further escalate its all-out attack on Palestinian civil society. All of this is diverting international attention from the Zionist regime's theft and its brutal suppression of the Palestinian people living under military occupation. The Dutch Foreign Ministry's briefing to Parliament mentions that the UAWC ended the employment of two staff members who were arrested by the Zionist regime in 2019 over their alleged involvement in a roadside explosion near a West Bank settlement that killed an Israeli girl and injured her brother and father. One of the arrested men, Samir Arbit, was hospitalized with life-threatening injuries after being tortured during his interrogation by Shin Bet, the Zionist regime's domestic intelligence agency. The Zionist regime prison authorities continued to interrogate Arbit while he was in intensive care, and a prison guard reportedly fired tear gas into his hospital room. Palestinian human rights organizations said that both Arbit and the other former employee, Abd al-Razak Faraj, suffered physical and psychological torture during interrogation. The Zionist regime's attorney general closed an investigation into Arbit's brutal interrogation early last year. Independent UN human rights expert condemned the Zionist regime's failure to prosecute, punish, and redress the torture and ill-treatment perpetrated against Arbit. The expert said, "We are alarmed that the use of so-called enhanced interrogation techniques or exceptional measures during questioning reportedly led to a forced confession, which the universal prohibition of torture and ill-treatment aims to prevent." Concerning the broader attack on UAWC, which predates the arrest of two of its former employees, Palestinian groups stated in 2020 that UAWC is preventing the Palestinian presence on land that the Zionist regime wants to annex. That is why UAWC has been under attack for years. The Palestinian group said the Netherlands should investigate Dutch campaigns maintaining commercial relations with and profiting from illegal Israeli settlements. Instead, a Palestinian group supporting farmers and vulnerable communities across Palestine finds itself under review. In its letter to Parliament, the Dutch Foreign Ministry reiterated that the Netherlands funds Palestinian non-governmental organizations as part of the country's support for a two-state solution. The Zionist regime's current regime cabinet openly refuses to negotiate with Palestinians towards a two-state solution supported, at least in rhetoric, by the US, EU, and United Nations.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.